Carman come down and give a commencement speech, the historian. Harry Carman spent three quarters of the hour telling us what a great man Charles S. Johnson was. And I said, my God, if he's such a great man, we don't know it. We're in bad shape. And so I think I won't talk anymore about Dr. Henderson. I have, in terms of my own qualifications, I do want to tell you that I've been to a great many conferences of the large universities over to Madison, Wisconsin, the smaller liberal arts colleges, Buck Hill, some are primarily Negro colleges, black colleges, if you prefer. Now I keep getting those words mixed up. That dates me. Over to Southern, and then I originated the first genuine honors work that I wanted to discuss. I want to discuss what honors work is in the 1940s, and the program, Dr. Henderson was on my committee and one of the most active members in setting up the FIST program. I have had rather wide, and I thought it'd be more useful, instead of making a long formal talk, to point out some of the areas that you have to make a judgment on, because I think judgments are made in these areas successfully, but largely in terms of minds meeting. In other words, there are a number of areas here that I want to discuss where it seems to me for an honors program to work, there has to be a very strong commitment on the part of the men that are responsible for it and so on and so on. So I'm just going to set up and point out some of the areas of controversy so on. Now, one of them may be a poor way to start, but one of them, you've got to make up your mind how far you want your program operated. Now, I haven't looked at your program. I didn't want to make any comments about it. I wanted to talk generally so that you wouldn't in any way be committed to saying this is strong or this was weak. But I think one of the big problems, you've got to make a judgment on director. Now, let me put it a little differently. After we set this program at FIST, one of our greatest difficulties was bringing a man who went to Kent State to head there on this program and then went elsewhere, and I won't discuss him. I think he did a pretty good job, but it became a one-man operation, and that's a very serious mistake, in my opinion. I think that every kind of a program needs a director, but I think it would be a grave mistake to bring a man who dominated major part of the program, because you leave a complete vacuum. When he left, it was just a plain vacuum, and the program was set back. Practically everything had been built around one man's idiosyncrasies was lost. I think you need to involve, I believe very strongly that a director should have initiative and be encouraged to make proposals, and should have to defend them to a substantial committee. I'm thoroughly committed on that. A strong committee is much more important than a super duper director. And then, of course, in this first point I'm making, it does seem to me that we're in this period of student ferment and change, and I think you've got to have some student representation on it. I believe that's clear. Now, I haven't reached the point of emancipation where I think these things should all originate with the students. I think in the early stages, the major responsibility should be shared pretty generally. Now, my feeling is you need a strong committee, fairly strong director, and so far as possible to have some students of strength in determining policy and procedures and everything of the kind. As I say, we made a very serious mistake. We've made a worse mistake in a different direction recently. I'm an assistant to the president there now, and I think it would be inappropriate for me to tell you. I told you the mistake we made at the outset. I won't discuss that.
I'm going to tell him anyway.
Now, I think the next thing you have to, for a program to work, you've got to be realistic and decide how many people you really want to try to reach, because honors work is very expensive. And I want to talk in a minute about who makes a good honors teacher and a good stupid on an instructor. But I think you've got to have a realistic idea of how big a group, because it's very expensive. For example, if you have an excellent classroom teacher and you pull him out of the classroom to give a course for 16 people, and I want to speak, there's no mystic number about about an honors course, but there are certain serious limitations. There is a question how far you can afford to go in depriving a great number of students of the talents of a man so as to use him in this other group. Now, the teacher that makes a good, honest course teacher is rather rare, because it's a person that can listen. Fundamentally, there's no definition of what an honest course is, but there's some general areas, some gray lines, and there's some clearly black lines. I suppose any honest, a course is an honest course if the major responsibility is shifted away from the professor toward the student. Now, there's lots of ways of doing that. There are lots of different kinds of courses. By the way, the addition of new names does not create an honors course. Primarily, it is the old originators of the honors program, I suppose, like Swarthmore. This was largely an individual matter of the professor, where he had a certain number of advisees and gave them certain opportunities of judgment and helped them plan their program and directed them and listened to reports. In other words, honors work, before it became a national fad, has been in existence for, I suppose, half a century. I suppose in preparing to take honors in British universities, what we call honors programs, and so on and so on. So the point I'm trying to make is that the nature of an honors program calls primarily for stimulation of the student and student response rather than the professor being the primus donis and so on and so on. Now, I think the most expensive kind of an honors program is the individual work, such as Harvard does a good deal of. That is very expensive, and where the professor works with a single individual and help him shape and determine his interest, work out a course, something of the kind. That's the kind of thing I started doing in 1940. And I'll tell you something interesting in my experience. Some of my strongest A students, people who've gone through the Harvard Law School with flying colors, taking a doctorate in flying, were not good at that. They needed a classroom. They needed to have people listen to them and applaud. About half of those students did less well. And so we come to this question of how you make the choice of people. But the point I'm getting at, now I'm not trying to do this in too organized a fashion, but I'm merely saying, first of all, you've got to make a judgment. We set from 5 to 15%. When my committee drafted out the thing for this. Now, that didn't mean it took a full program of honors, but the honors program would reach that number of students in some sort of manner. Then in addition to individual tutorial work, which is honors work, I think if you pick, and I'll talk about selection a little later, but a group in a big general course like Western Civ, a sizable group. Now, there's some question how many you can handle. The last time I did it, I went up to 22, which is pretty high. But here you made a judgment of the people that, first of all, I'll tell you later on how we chose them. But you can have a fairly large group siphoned out, and I don't mean merely the A's and the B's, because for it to be an honors course, you've got to change the method of procedure. Now, for a long time, they've put in the sciences and mathematics, they had certain sections of the better students. Better students does not mean an honors course. It means students who become better through different procedure and different action and so on and so on. There's a lot of misunderstanding about that. So there is that sort of an honest procedure. That is to say, people pick carefully and encourage. If you can't go much above 22, pretty high. Then, of course, the standard honors course, where the students write papers and report their results, those, in general, are in fields that are interdisciplinary and so on and so on, like the images of man and so on and so on. I won't give a list of those. But these usually don't run more than 15, because there's almost no way that you can get around all the students. This, I suppose, comes closer to resembling the old seminar method of proceeding, which Henry Adams developed at Harvard and so on. And I suppose that was an honest proceeding in a way, except here again, for it to be honest work, there has to be a little different motivation, a little different procedure, and a little different kind of accounting, all those things. Well, I think those are the standard forms of honest work, that is to say, to summarize purely individual work, shaping a program, shaping an idea, reporting directly to a professor, honest section of standard courses, which would work. By the way, the hours and the environment need to be as different as you can get them. For example, we had a seminar room in Park Hall. I had about 22 people in Western Civ, and we would only meet once a week, and we'd only meet as long as the group was galvanized and alive. I must say they never got out early, though.
you're
wrong. They used to ask me to. They say they want to hear from me more. But night atmosphere, all those things. Anyway, you can change the atmosphere. For example, I attended an honors conference years ago in the early 50s at Harvard. And one of the key men there was convinced you had a blackboard in the room. You couldn't have an honors course because you were identified. And I think that's carrying it much too far. But the idea there was that you, the minute you use conventional, ordinary techniques, you tend to let the student slip back into his ordinary outlooks and habits. Well, there's that. Now, how do you choose these people? There are a lot of ways. The method that I used to use was, first of all, you have to set in the standard work. These kind of courses would normally be the second semester. And I think you'd make a judgment in a large measure. You'd have to do something with grades. For example, unless there was some evidence that a person having tremendous potential from IQ tests or something else. You'd have some evidence of success. But we used to have the whole department examine them, see how they responded to challenge, whether they got angry, whether they were set in a mold. And I had some interesting experiences in all that sort of thing.
Come on, tell
me. Well, I'll hold that because I want to cover a thing. You'll get tired of hearing me talk. You've already warned that I'm likely to talk too long. But, I mean, first of all, you have to have a student volunteer and build up. And incidentally, if you're going to build up an honors program, you've got a damn good teacher here. And there's no reason in the world why you can bring meet. You might keep him on the campus a little bit. Always a big fellow, used to live up in Nashville, Tennessee. And it would be nice for the students to meet with him even once in 2 weeks. Images of economists, something of the kind. No, I really do. I think it'd be good for you. No, Henderson hadn't really. I told you I wasn't going to praise him to the heavens, and I certainly won't condemn him to the region below. But somewhere in between, he's an awfully good teacher, and it's too bad. It would do a lot for the program for you to handle one of these little groups. But there are different methods, therefore, of choosing. One is a student's alternative. One is what his record has actually been. One is any result from any standard courses. But primarily, I think the biggest thing is student eagerness and outlook.
Eagerness?
Yes, eagerness and zeal. And the person that's too argumentative does not make a good, honest student. Aggressively argumentative. The person that's too mild doesn't make good, honest students. Somewhere in between there. And any methods from testing, interviews, and so on and so on. Now, there's one thing I want to say that I have strong feelings about, and that is grades. Because this is an awfully touchy matter. I personally, now, for example, the program at Fisk at the present time, all of the seminars and so on operate with no grades. Now, I think that's very unfortunate. For one thing, it means that it's very hard for the students to qualify for general standard conventional honors. Phi Beta Kappa is having great deal of difficulty now determining so many schools are operating brown is utterly ridiculous, in my opinion, right across the board. I'm not talking about an honors program. I'm talking about the standard college program. The Soviets, I am thoroughly committed to grades, and I think no grades is dishonest. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. Now, I know two schools where there were riots over doing away with grades, graduate schools. Now, I've seen all the evaluations. They have grades. They're just fooling themselves. In other words, when it comes to recommendations, they have to be evaluations. Now, what I'm really getting at is, I think that in setting up an honors program, you make an error if you get into no grades. But because I think there's a lot of difference in quality between A and B. And I think you can set up a requirement if anyone drops below the equivalent of B, that you have to drop out of that particular part of the program. But I think it simplifies. Of course, it's true you can work out, as we have at Fisk, you can work out general honors, and you don't care, but many students want to be eligible for conventional honors and so on and so on. At Fisk, a student graduate with general honors, he's taken the equivalent of something like, I've forgotten the exact amount, something like 21 hours of honors work, divided between so many of these, what are substantially seminars and honors, individual honors course in the study, but something like that. And he has to pass. Now, it's true, you can use a final examination for evaluation, but I myself am pretty strongly committed to the idea of grades, because, as I say, I don't see any reason why some 16 people should all qualify, so far as the record is concerned, the same way, when they at least break down into two or three different categories, at least two. So I'm pretty much sold on keeping some semblance of grades. But where the students are asked to give their opinion, in most schools they're voting no grades. But I'm not sure how good their judgment is or anything of the kind. You've got to have some evaluation of what you do, and as I say, it's conventionally done in blocks of 3 hours or even 4 hours at the end. In other words, the different instructors, together with a committee of certain selection, draft a final exam and something of the kind. The programs are, as I said at the very beginning, honors programs are pretty expensive because of the reasons that I've made. But the great purpose is to provoke talent that wouldn't be provoked. And, of course, the programs are completely unsuccessful unless it accomplishes that objective. And since they're more expensive, why, there's no justification for them unless you actually provoke activity and talent. Now, there are a lot of other questions. How far should you segregate honest students? Now, I was of the opinion that since most students in small colleges, particularly inclined to be casual about the academic requirements, most small colleges, possibly Reed and one or two, that's not true. My feeling was that the more you could segregate them, the better. And we voted a special dormitory with special eating facilities and everything else for the male students. By the way, we weren't prejudiced against females. We didn't have budget to let us do that, and we didn't have suitable buildings. We did that, and they had their special programs, and they invited in speakers, and one of the men headed the house, who is now chairman, one of my students, Ronald Wallace, who is chairman of the Department of Government at Howard right now, and so on. Now, the man who came in dominated our program for a good many years, was violently hostile to that, said that was unreasonable, and they did away with it. But I have a feeling. Now, how far should you bring in the outside again with the honors program? Now, at present time, we've got a big grant for our honors program. They're bringing in a lot of lecturers, and somehow or other, they're tying the two together and hoping, letting the whole student body be invited and so on and so on. Well, now, I have a feeling that most colleges, the flattening and deadening effect of the Oedipus complex here, so far as education is concerned, my feeling is the more you can briefly at least segregate them, so much the better. This statement that Dr. Henderson was making was Charles S. Johnson, I think, originated that statement. We were having a Phi Beta Kappa convocation with the Chancellor Vanderbilt addressing us, and there were about, we had invited all the students on the dean's list, and we invited probably 90 on it, and about 30 of them turned out. Johnson said, well, out there is the population. Here are the students. Well, that's, did you know that that came from?
Yeah.
Yes. Questions of that kind can resolve themselves, but if you can set up a special library, so if you make an honor to be in the honors program, and if you can encourage them to come more together to themselves. Now, I don't know anything about eating and dormitory facilities, whether you have anything in that category that you could even experiment with. I have a lot of notes down here on other related items, but I think you get tired of hearing anyone talk and so on. I think that one of the things, then, in rapid summary, you've got to decide how many of your faculty are deeply interested in the program, how feasible it is to try to reach either in the form of one or two courses, a substantial block of work. And by substantial block of work, I mean these seminar-type courses, four or five of them, one or two departmental courses, individual courses, and so on and so on. Then I think you've got to make a big judgment. I think this question of grades is very important. I think the question of a director and an enthusiastic committee, not fighting the director or vice versa, hopefully, cooperative. I think you've got to make a little gesture to your students and give them some real voice. We ran into an awful problem there by paying a student out of a fantastic amount. That created all kinds of programs, and the student was getting paid more than about as much as the instructors. That was out of a new grant we had. And I think that, of course, that's utterly ridiculous. Make that sort of a gesture. But I'm thoroughly sold on honors program. If you proceed, I think it's much better to proceed modestly and expand it than it is to set up a very ambitious program that collapses because it's on paper. So those are a few of the ideas. Now, I have a lot of ideas in this, but I can remember the time when I used to beg the Lord to release me from listening to a man much longer. So I think I will just stop at that point.
Very good, Tim. Well, you did precisely what I had hoped, and that was to just raise a lot of questions and make a lot of observations and some good questions. I've got about a half dozen here myself that I want to pursue with, but I think we'll throw it open unless anybody wants to start.
Yeah.
On the matter of separating honest students from the rest of the student body, there's an opposite theory, which is if you don't separate them, they'll somehow or other bring the mass of students up to their level. What do you think of that?
I think that's kibosh. I don't think there's any way in the world a small group can take this mass of inertia and bring it up their level. They can just get dragged down.
They don't believe that there'll be spin-off effects?
No. Well, let me make it very clear. Certainly some. All I'm really trying to say is I personally feel in any American college I know anything about, the more we could really encourage bright students pursuing honors work, the more we could encourage to associate themselves, the better, because there's all kinds of distractions anyway.
What about the chief taking his theory a little further? What is your observation with regard to, let's assume you have an extremely separated group, but at certain times they do come in. For example, let's assume that this separated group takes 50% of their work in the conventional scheme.
Oh, they would.
You're not saying that you would have 100%.
No. I was just saying that I think that since there's so much dilution of this whole process, if you can carry them a little further than just the honors coursework, I'm saying I think that's useful.
I'll kind of be the traffic manager here and follow the street. Pure, you're next in.
What really you're saying is that we at Clark College have to construct some kind of a model that neatly separates the philosophical, the administrative, the academic, the financial, pragmatic concerns, and so on and so forth. And this model, we also should remember that honor program more than 100 years old.
Why,
program.
Sure.
In British universities, most of the British universities have a BS honors. And I've gone through that program myself.
Yeah.
And it is for selected few, not for the mass scale. Then if you compare the two, the British versus the American, you will find that honors program is for very gifted people. Very few, maybe 1 or 2% of the total group.
Yeah.
Under the Oxford and University of London system, whichever you want to take. The one thing which I personally disagree with you wholeheartedly is that you said that in the honors program, the students should not be overly aggressive or under or too mild. I think students should be overly aggressive to be in honors program.
Well, we're talking about two different things. I wasn't talking about I wasn't talking about academic aggressiveness. I was talking about chip on your shoulder aggressiveness.
Oh, I see.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you did bring that out. No, there's no way in the world being too aggressive academically. But if you just want to fight rather than reason or argue and get mad and at any challenge, it's that kind of, and there are a lot of people in that category.
You mentioned something about the characteristics of the students being involved in the honors program, but not the characteristics of the teacher. I'd like to know, in terms of your experience, what kind of...
Well, I did...
Have a model right here.
Yeah. sometimes, that's why this involves some serious consideration, why you use your talents. I think the most successful classroom teacher is the person that brings out the maximum vigor of the maximum number of people. And he would be that sort of person. What I'm really trying to say is, I'm doing it very badly, but I'm trying to say is that an honest professor has to be provocative without himself carrying the ball. He has to... It's all right for him to toss the ball and see a good catch, but the biggest point is.